Hello and welcome to the IFRS Interpretations Committee podcast for November 2011. I'm Michael Stewart, Director of Implementation Activities, and I'm joined by Gary Berkowitz, one of the staff on the Interpretations Committee team. The views that you'll hear during this podcast are our own views and are not official views of the IFRS Interpretations Committee or of the International Accounting Standards Board. So Gary, we had the last Interpretations Committee meeting just on the 3rd and 4th of November, and I think there were quite a lot of issues that we were looking at this time, and I think it'd be useful if we just talk about a few of the highlights of the committee on this particular podcast. Now, for me, one of the main issues that we were looking at was one that we've looked at for a little while now, and that's an item to do with IAS 37 and IFRS IFRIC 6, and that is levies charged for participation in a market on a specified date. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, with this one, this is an issue that's looking at levies where the amount payable is as a result of participating in a particular market in a particular period or on a particular date, and in some cases where the amount of the levy is driven by a measure such as revenue in a preceding period. And the question is all about when to recognise a liability for this levy, and connected with that is whether the liability can be recognised progressively during the course of a year. And many of these levies are annual levies, and hence people think that perhaps in the interim financial statements we should be recognising a proportionate share of that levy. Now, of course, this was added to the agenda back in July, and it's been discussed a few times, and again at this November meeting. Now, I think the committee's making progress in this area now, and in fact there were some tentative conclusions and observations that the committee made at this meeting, which I think is worth highlighting. The first of which is that neither economic compulsion nor going concern principle are sufficient to be able to create an obligation. Secondly, if there's more than one event that is needed in order to establish an obligation, then it's the last of those necessary events that is the one that triggers the obligation. The obligating event, if it arises progressively, or does arise progressively, if the activity that creates the present obligation occurs over a period of time. And I think that's one that we'll be looking at in more detail at the next meeting to understand what we mean by the event or the activity occurring over a period of time. And then I think finally, the other thing the committee talked about a little at this meeting relating to this issue is when recognising a liability to pay a levy, whether it gives rise to an expense or whether there are circumstances when an asset should be recognised. And some of the tentative decisions or views expressed were that there could be an asset when the levy is paid in exchange for directly receiving a particular asset or particular future services in consideration for that levy. And as I say, this is an issue that will certainly be coming back to the next Interpretations Committee meeting in January. But one of the new issues that we talked about this time was one relating to IAS 19. And Gary, can you tell us a little bit about that issue?
Sure, Michael, yeah. So that IAS 19 issue is was around applying the definition of termination benefits. And as you mentioned, it was a new issue. Specifically, it was relating to a specific type of plan in Germany. I'm not going to try and pronounce the German wording for that, but we'll refer to them as ATZ plans. And the idea of these plans is that they are early retirement programs. So the idea is you are trying to encourage your employees to retire at an earlier date than they otherwise would have. And you do that by offering them an incentive payment if they do retire at an earlier date, because in the long run, you actually end up then paying them less than if they'd continue to work all the way till the end of retirement. Now, a couple of important key characteristics around these plans is that the bonus payment that the employees would receive if they did take up the offer to leave earlier are only paid if a certain service period is completed. Now, the question that was raised at the committee was whether or not that bonus payment would qualify as a termination benefit under IS 19. The reason why that was important was if it's a termination benefit, then it would be recorded at the point in time when there is the obligation. So it would all be recorded at a point in time, whereas if it was considered to be some form of post-employment benefit, then it would be recognized over time as those services were provided. Now, the question was raised in the context of the revised IS 19, which was issued in 2011, because this amended some of the guidance around termination benefits. So the question was really asking for those type of ATZ plans in Germany, is that incentive now going to be accounted for as a termination benefit, or in the context of the revised IS 19, would it be accounted for as a form of post-employment benefit and therefore recognized over time? The tentative decision of the committee with respect to these specific types of plans was that it was not a termination benefit, specifically because of the need of the employees to actually provide that future service in order to be eligible to receive that payment. So in simple terms, if the employee left before the date of vesting, they would effectively not receive that payment. And the committee felt that that indicator was enough to say that this was a post-employment benefit and therefore it should be recognized over time. That is obviously a tentative agenda decision at this point in time, and it'll be, I'm sure, issued at some stage in the update, and comments on that will be due by 12th of December 2011. So let's see if the constituents out there agree with the committee.
That's right, because this was submitted with a request for interpretation, and so in accordance with our due process, when the committee makes a decision not to proceed with an interpretation in response to a request, then it gives constituents an opportunity to comment on the reasons that it's given for not taking that one forward. And as you say, yes, that's open for comment until the 12th of December. And then that will be reconsidered at the January meeting with a view to confirming that tentative decision. Now, there's another new issue brought to this meeting relating to amortization. What was that all about?
Yeah, so that was an issue around the amortization method, and it was asked in the context of IS 38 intangible assets, specifically relating to a service concession arrangement, in other words, relating to IFRIC 12. And the request came in asking for clarification of the meaning of the term consumption of expected future economic benefits embodied in the asset, which is, you know, some of the wording that comes from IS 38, which explains how the amortization method should be applied. And it was effectively asking, you know, specifically, can a revenue-based amortization method be used? So put simply, if I recognized an intangible asset in the context of a service concession arrangement, the question was, when I'm trying to determine the period over which and the method over which I should amortize that asset, can I use a revenue-based model? The committee view was that revenue, the important principle that the committee came to here was that revenue actually reflects the generation of benefits normally and not the consumption of the economic benefits. And if you think back to what I just mentioned, if the amortization method, the principle is all concerned around consumption of expected future economic benefits and not the generation of those benefits, the committee came to the view that a revenue-based amortization method should not be used. The way that the committee is planning on taking this forward is via a proposal to the board to amend IS 38 to clarify this through an annual improvement, because I think this is a question we have had in the past, and it's an issue that does result in a bit of trouble for our constituents.
That's right, and I think the proposal is that we'll bring some proposed wording to the Interpretations Committee in January, and then it can make its way through to the board to ask the board if they agree with the committee's proposals there. Then another issue that we looked at this time, again, one that's been to the committee previously, relating to IFRIC 15. Now, IFRIC 15 is the interpretation issued some years ago now, giving guidance on when it's appropriate to recognise revenue from the sale of certain goods over a period of time rather than at the completion of the contract. And specifically, the issue here relates to revenue recognition for the sale of residential apartments when those apartments are sold at the beginning of the construction of the apartment block. And in what circumstances would it be appropriate to recognise the revenue progressively as the apartments are being constructed? And when would it be more appropriate to wait until the apartments are complete and recognise all of the revenue at that point in time? Now, as I say, this is something that was discussed earlier in the year, and the committee had decided at that stage to pause and to wait to see where the board's revenue project was getting to, because obviously approaching 30th of June, there was a focus on wrapping that one up. Now, of course, since then, the board has decided to re-expose the revenue project. So that exposure draft will be coming out in the next week or so. But meanwhile, the committee felt that it was important to take another look at this, see what was being proposed in the new exposure draft, and also to have a look in detail at how we might apply IFRIC 15 and the current revenue standard to some of the types of situation that this has been troublesome for. And so at this meeting, the committee looked at some analysis that were prepared by some of the staff members, looking at two jurisdictions which, if you like, were opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of what you might expect to achieve in terms of completion contract accounting or continuous transfer accounting. And these were analysed under both the IFRIC 15 requirements and the new proposals that are shortly to be published in the re-exposure draft. Now, at this particular meeting, the committee felt that it could not adequately identify the key factors required to make the decision, and so have agreed that there should be some further follow-up done. So, first of all, the committee members themselves are going to identify which characteristics they see as persuasive in determining whether or not continuous transfer should be recognised for sale of residential apartments. And then we're going to take the matter to the board to get their direction on perhaps how we should take this forward, bearing in mind that we've got the revenue project progressing in parallel, and then see where we should take that at a future committee meeting. And Gary, the next issue that I think was of particular interest, actually, and another IFRIC 12 related issue, actually.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us about that one?
Sure, yeah. It looks like IFRIC 12 seems to be the hot topic at the moment. So yeah, this was another, as you said, Michael, IFRIC 12 issue, and this one related to payments that the operator in a service concession arrangement may make to either the grantor or a third party, possibly. The type of payments that we're talking about here are payments that might represent right of use to assets, or alternatively payments that are just made for the right to operate the concession. So for example, you might operate a service concession where you on behalf of the government are running the bus service, and you make payments to the government for the right to be able to actually use those buses in the service concession. Another example would be if you are running on behalf of the government the hospital for them, the public service, but the government is charging you just a flat fee of, you know, 100 currency units per month for the right to actually have that concession. Now, in the context of the question, these payments could be made either directly to the grantor, or in some cases they might actually be made to a third party, and that is normally in the context of right of use of assets. So if you were effectively getting a right of use of the buses in my earlier example, but the payments don't go to the grant or they go to a third party. Now, the question here was whether or not those types of payments are within the scope of IFRIC 12 or whether or not they might be in the scope of some other standard, for example, IS 17. And the reason why that was important or why the submitter was interested in that was because if the payments are in the scope of IS 17, then in most cases you'll find that it's an operating lease and therefore the operator would account for those payments on a straight line basis in accordance with IS 17. However, if they were considered to be within the scope of IFRIC 12, then there was a question around whether or not you should actually record an asset and liability on day one. So this ultimately, in a nutshell, was all a recognition question of whether or not on day one you record an asset and corresponding liability or whether or not you record these payments over time. Where the committee did get to in terms of items that were noted, the first question was these payments that are made for a right of use of assets. And there, the committee noted that when the payments do relate to the right of use of a tangible asset, the key question is whether or not the operator controls that right of use. And if the operator controls that right of use, then the committee said, well, then that is a lease and that should be in the scope of IS 17. However, if the assessment is that the operator does not actually control that right of use, then the committee noted that that would actually be in the scope of IFRIC 12.
And that really comes back to the heart of what IFRIC 12 is about, isn't it? About whether or not you control the assets that are used in the concession in order to identify whether you're in the scope of the service concession guidance or not.
Absolutely, Michael. So I think the committee used some of the previous thinking that they'd made when they were deciding how you are just generally in the scope of IFRIC 12, and it was all around the level of control that the operator has over those assets. So that's exactly right. So the committee, you know, I think that they definitely made progress in terms of guiding you with respect to what scope of standard you would be in, with respect to whether or not then if assume that we are in IFRIC 12 though. So if you've decided you are in IFRIC 12, I think with respect to that, the committee decided that we need to do a bit of further analysis. Some of the things that will be brought back to the committee for consideration would be whether an asset has been acquired. So I think the staff paper was looking more on the credit side, I'll say, of the transaction, whereas I think the committee wanted a bit more focus on whether or not that debit actually represented an asset. Another question that will come back was if the operator can cancel the arrangement without penalty, should you still get the same accounting as you'd get if there was a minimum contractual requirement to make payments? Some of the other more tricky aspects that I think will be coming back as well is how the measurement of the assets initially and subsequently would interact with the requirements of IS 39 if the liability is a financial liability. And I think specifically there, I think the committee was thinking about payments that may be variable because they might change over time depending on some uncertainty.
Now, you mentioned variable payments. That sounds rather familiar.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You probably know better than I that the committee looked at a very similar issue recently with respect to contingent pricing for purchases of property, plants and equipment and also intangible assets. So I think rightfully so, the committee pointed out that these issues are very closely related, and obviously we'll be bringing this back, but it's probably worth noting that I think with respect to that contingent pricing, that issue is currently on hold, pending the board finalizing their leasing project because of the similarities and some of the issues there. So I think lots of exciting things ahead to probably be coming back to the next committee meeting.
That's great. Thank you. Well, that brings us to the close of this particular IFRS Interpretations Committee podcast. The formal report of the November 2011 meeting will be published in IFRIC Update and will be available on the ISB website. And that is what should be referred to for the details, the official details of the proceedings of the committee. The next meeting of the IFRS Interpretations Committee will be on the 17th and 18th of January 2012. And just as a reminder, the views expressed in this podcast are those of the presenters, their personal views, and should not be taken as being official views of the IFRS Interpretations Committee or the International Accounting Standards Board. Thank you.
Thanks.